This is Joe Callis, formerly of the Human League and the Rizzillos, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today it is Election Day. Of course, it's been Election Day almost every day since October 23rd. But today is the final Election Day of this cycle. And you have until 9 p.m. to vote. So get out there. There are all sorts of town and village elections. There are five ballot propositions. There are state Supreme Court justices up for re-election and for election for the first time. Get out there and vote today if you can. And we'll tell you more about that on the WGXC Morning Show. We will also hear from Howie Hawkins about the two big issues of the day, internationally, the climate crisis, and nationally, whether the big budget bill will pass in Washington, D.C. We'll also hear the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate and national headlines from the Public News Service on the WGXC Morning Show. It all begins after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network.
Welcome to the video rental store in your mind.
Looking for something to watch, but feeling overwhelmed by all the options?
Feeling unsatisfied with all the boring, restrictive categories like romance and drama or horror?
Tune in to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda every second and fourth Tuesday at 7 p.m. and get turned on to movie genres like eco-horror,
unsettling kids' movies,
alien boyfriends,
creepy therapy.
Start listening so you can start watching today.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Kravitz and Son Roofing, a local family-owned and operated full-service roofing company for more than 48 years. Specializing in residential and commercial roof construction, repair, maintenance, and replacement using high-quality and affordable roofing products. Information at 518-567-4026 or online at KravitzandSonRoofing.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org. and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Voting this year ends today, November 2nd, with town posts, countywide positions, five statewide ballot propositions, and a few state Supreme Court seats at stake. Voting began October 23rd this year and ends today with polls open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. on November 2nd. Absentee ballots in this year's election can be mailed in through November 2nd. One change this election, a new state law passed in 2021 restores the right to vote for a person convicted of a felony upon release from incarceration, regardless of if they are on parole or have a term of post-release supervision. If a convicted felon is not incarcerated, they are now eligible to register to vote in New York.
COVID-19 cases continue to surge in the area. Spectrum News reports that in Pittsfield, in western Massachusetts, the rate of cases is the highest it's been since April. There are now 34 positive cases per 100,000 people there, and the positive test rate is also climbing, up to 3.6%. There are now 108 active cases of COVID-19 in Pittsfield, which is also the highest since April. The Daily Freeman reports a smaller uptick in cases in Dutchess and Ulster counties. In Ulster County, there were 458 with COVID-19 as of October 31st, up 7 from the day before. Ulster County reported 284 coronavirus cases October 29th, up 17 from the day before. In Columbia County, officials reported 12 new cases October 30th and 11 more October 29th. Greene County, with a smaller population, announced more new cases than that, with 18 more on October 29th. In Albany County, officials announced another death November 1st, but the number of cases there dropped to 52, down from 83 new cases reported on October 31st. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Natasha Von Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Green Media that a lockout of all buildings in the Ichabod School, Crane School District on November 1st lasted approximately 30 minutes. Lockout means there was thought to be a possible threat outside of the school. The threat that gave rise to district officials taking the action in Kinderhook on Monday was later determined to be false. Quote, our high school principal was notified by a parent of a possible threat to the campus, unquote, Ichabod Crane School Superintendent Suzanne Guntlow said. Quote, out of an abundance of caution, while we investigated with the Columbia County Sheriff's Office, we put the buildings on lockout, unquote. The lockout keeps students in the buildings and prevents visitors from entering, Guntlow said. Quote, it was the first thing this morning. It only lasted about half an hour, unquote, she said. The superintendent said she could not reveal any other details about the incident. The tip was shared by a parent with the high school principal and the Columbia County Sheriff's Office investigated, she said. The county sheriff's office deferred all questions to the school district. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Nick Reisman reports for Spectrum News that New York's court system is backed up because of the COVID-19 pandemic, but it is not because of court workers not getting vaccinated. Chief Judge Janet DeFiore says, and I quote, almost 100% of our judges and professional staff, end quote, have submitted either proof of vaccination or a medical religious exemption. But the mix of in-person trials and video conferencing during the pandemic has slowed the courts down. On November 1st, DeFiore said the court officials were asking state leaders to put, and I quote, modifications to the current social distancing rule, end quote, to increase trial capacity, even in the face of persistent case counts locally. She said, and I quote, now we are all aware that the pending dockets in some of our courts have grown in response to the extended impact of the pandemic on court operations, but we cannot, and of course will not, use the public health crisis as an excuse for mounting backlogs in those courts, end quote. She added, and I quote, we have an obligation to move and resolve cases efficiently and promptly, and we are determined to get back to the outstanding progress that we were making under the Excellence Initiative to manage our dockets efficiently and effectively, end quote. Read more about this story in Spectrum News.
Melanie Lukosovic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media that two candidates will face off in the November 2nd election for Queens Town Supervisor, incumbent Republican George McHugh and Democrat Cindy Rousey. McHugh, 56, is a lifelong resident of Albany County. He is an attorney by profession and is seeking his second consecutive term. He previously served as town supervisor from 2000 to 2001. McHugh served in the U.S. Army for 30 years and retired honorably with the rank of colonel in 2017. He's running on the Republican and conservative lines. McHugh believes the top issue facing the town of Queens, quote, continues to be striking the proper balance between being a great place to work and also being a great place to live and raise a family, just like in our own personal lives, Humans must strike a balance, the balance in this case being between developing industry and job creation, while at the same time maintaining a healthy and safe environment so that our children and young people choose Queemans as a place to live and raise families, unquote. Rousey, 45, has lived in the county for more than 10 years and currently resides in the village of Ravenna. She has served as the town of Queemans clerk for nearly 4 years. Her term expires December 31st. Rousey is running on the Democratic and Working Families lines. Rousey believes the top issue facing the community is the lack of economic development. Quote, if we are able to bring in more small businesses, many other problems will fix themselves. More businesses will bring less vacant buildings, less crime, a more beautiful 9W corridor and Main Street, more sales tax revenue, more property tax revenue, more residents, and an improved quality of life, unquote, she said. Read more about this story in the Ravenna News Herald.
Sam Rowden's reports for Columbia Green Media that the day after an October 21st letter from Hudson First Ward alderperson Jane Trombley to Mayor Kamau Johnson insisting Hudson Corporate Counsel Cheryl Roberts recuse herself from matters involving A. Colarusso and Sons, Roberts agreed. Roberts is also executive director of the nonprofit Greenberger Center for Social and Criminal Justice. That nonprofit got a land donation from Colarusso in May for the development of a wellness hub. Roberts said the claims of conflict are, and I quote, unfounded, end quote, but still agreed to recuse herself in any matters involving the company, which works on many projects for the city. Trombley said, and I quote, that was it. Not that there was any wrongdoing, not that it affected her decisions, but the appearance just was way too close for my taste, end quote. A. Colarusso and Sons runs a sand and gravel mine, stone quarry, and blacktop plant in Greenport. Roberts said in a statement, and I quote, if there was a conflict, I would have recused myself long ago. There is nothing secret about the proposed land donation, end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
And Robert Gavin reports in the Times Union that the United States Supreme Court November 1st issued a decision vacating a New York appellate court decision in a lawsuit brought by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Albany that challenged the state's mandate that required employers to offer abortion services as part of their health insurance benefits. The diocese challenged a 2017 regulation that included what opponents argued was an excessively narrow religious exemption. Quote, we are gratified and grateful that the Supreme Court has recognized the serious constitutional concerns over New York State's heavy-handed abortion mandate on religious employers, unquote, Bishop Edward Scharfenberger said in a statement. The bishop said he was, quote, confident that the unconstitutional regulatory action taken by New York State will ultimately be completely overturned as incompatible with our country's First Amendment guarantee of religious liberty. The case will be reconsidered. The decision was credited to Justice Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch, members of the court's conservative majority. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, a chance of showers after 2 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a high near 51 degrees. On Tuesday night, a chance of showers mainly before 8 p.m. It will be partly cloudy with a low of around 33 degrees. And on Wednesday, isolated showers after 2 p.m., mostly sunny with a high near 49 degrees. And Wednesday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 29 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You've tuned in to hear all sorts of creative community voices on the radio today, WGXC 90.7 FM. At 10 a.m., we'll be live in Acre with Justin Maiman's new show, The Ginger Radio Hour. This morning, Peter and the Wolf is his theme. And then at 11 a.m., it's time for the early Electro Mix show with featured artists today, S.D. Spieth, Ivan Pacino, and Custin Moreno, among others. Then at noon, after the local news, DJ Patty Boom beams in from Cornwallville with the Vinyl Freedom show. We have a radio ballet on the Radio Art Hour at 3 p.m., and then we go live to Hudson at 4 p.m. with the WGXC afternoon show hosted by Randall Martin and Kim Singletary from Hudson. At 6 p.m., Julia Jorn talks with Tim Corneliusson Sr. and Tim Corneliusson Jr., the family behind the recently opened Old Factory Brewing Company in downtown Cairo, and they will tell you about the technology and the chemistry they're using to brew beer in Cairo on the All Together Now program. At 8 p.m., it's time for the Leprous Garden Death Metal Monthly Show from Mantis, and at 10 p.m., the election results will start to come in, and Dan Seward from the Battlefield Earth Show will bring them to you as he plays music and more on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The Global Day of Action for Climate Justice in Albany on Saturday, November 6th, is one of the many events you can find on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. The rally and march starts at 11 a.m. at the Radix Center, 153 Grand Street in Albany, and concludes with a rally at the Federal O'Brien Building at 12:30 p.m. at Clinton and Pearl Streets. With hundreds of similar events across the country, the Albany Global Day of Action for Climate Justice is again Saturday, November 6th, starting at 11:30 a.m. Find out all the information about this event in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Early Electro Mix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, November 2nd. It is starting to get cold out there. This morning's early morning temperature range is 35 in Mackey, 40 in West Athens. Freeze warnings are in place as close as Beacon. Snow is expected today in New York. Main centers of interest will be the Adirondacks and the Lake Effect Belt. A little snow is expected locally to fall over Blackhead Mountain, but we are only looking at a dusting. A high of 52 happens around 3 p.m. Just after dark, some light isolated rain may fall. Overnight, temperatures get down to 33 degrees. Wednesday looks dry with a high of 48. We dip below freezing Wednesday night, reaching 30 degrees. Thursday, a high of 48, and another freezing night taking us down to 31 degrees. Friday will be dry with a high of 52. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 1 a.m., low tide at 7:53 a.m., high tide again at 1:41 p.m., and low tide again at 8:16 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 54 degrees. Sunset today will be at 5:36 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:26 a.m. Looking way up, we see G1 class storms are expected on Thursday as a CME enters our planetary region. Solar wind speed is currently 559 kilometers per second at 8.4 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 53. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lauren Jones of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
less bass in the monitor, please?
Today is Election Day, and WGXC will be providing coverage all day. We're previewing candidates during the day as the polls are still open until 9 p.m. And then after 10 p.m., we'll start to hear election results. Dan Seward's Battlefield Earth show probably have the first results, and then we'll have more election results after midnight and full results in the morning on Wednesday as they come in. We're also asking listeners to call in to WGXC if they have any reports of election shenanigans. You can call in and leave a three-minute message, as many three-minute messages as you'd like. 518-291-WGXC. That's 518-291-9492. 518-291-WGXC. And leave a message. We'll report it on the air if you can back up your story about whatever shenanigans you see going on locally. There are some election shenanigans that have been going on for months and months, like in Rensselaer County. Rensselaer County Executive is up for election. That's currently incumbent Steve McLaughlin, who is a Republican. He's running against Democrat Gwen Wright. And also on the ballot is Sarah J. McDermott on the Working Families line. McDermott responded to zero candidate profiles, interviews, anything. She's a persona non grata on the campaign trail. We have not seen hide nor hair. And the Working Families Party isn't even backing her. Why is she there? She's there to take away votes from Democrat Gwen Wright and ensure the re-election of Republican Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin. And why does this matter? Because in 2017, McLaughlin was elected by just 1,090 votes, and there were 3,411 votes cast on the Working Families Party line. So if that happens again, the Working Families votes for a person who's not even running and is just a placeholder to divert votes away from the Democrat might lead to the Republican winning. So again, Gwen Wright is running on the Democratic line for Rensselaer County Executive. Steve McLaughlin's running on the Republican line. And Sarah J. McDermott is listed as on the Working Families Party line, but has not mounted any campaign at all and is just there to divert Democratic votes away from Wright and towards McLaughlin. Other late-breaking election news, Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that Columbia County Sheriff David Bartlett is heading into this election without the endorsement of the police unions that supported him in the past. The New York State Law Enforcement Officers Union, a statewide police union that includes the corrections officers at the Columbia County Jail, declined to endorse either candidate in the election. Don Kraft is the Democrat running against Bartlett, who's on the Republican line. The New York State Troopers Police Benevolent Association also declined to endorse a candidate in the race. The Columbia County 911 Dispatchers Benevolent Association endorsed Bartlett in 2017 but did not endorse either candidate this year. Bartlett got seven police union endorsements in 2017. This time, three of those seven did not endorse him this cycle, and four unions did not respond to repeated inquiries about if they were endorsing a candidate. The Columbia County Sheriff's race between Kraft and Bartlett is among the most contested races around, if you judge by the number of signs you see driving around Columbia County. Again, tune in election results as they come in this evening, and we'll also have a full report tomorrow after the polls close tonight at 9 p.m.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Yo, don't just vote. We'll be right back.
This ain't no 3D movie, there's a choice. Imagination fuels the voice. Your vote is your magic wand. Vote for whipped cream clouds if you want.
Just vote for a candidate, a persona because you relate to it. Don't just vote along party lines. There's more than two.
Are listening. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acre Catskills. Today, East Durham.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined today by Howie Hawkins with the Green Party, who is the 2020 Green Party nominee for president, who will also be speaking this Saturday, November 6th, in Albany at the Day of Action Globally for Climate Justice. Begins at 11 a.m. at the Radix Center in the South End. So, Howie, you know, you were, you know, first you know, person, candidate, at least in the United States, who really began to promote a Green New Deal back in 2010. Congress is trying to wrap up this idea about a Build Back Better proposal from President Biden and Senator Schumer. The so-called framework that the president recently announced, which apparently has not yet been agreed to by the two Democratic senators, been holding out, you know, is talking about around $55 billion a year for climate, you know, over a 10-year period. What do you think about where Congress is right now with the Build Back Better proposal? I mean, a lot of groups are saying this will be the largest investment in American history in climate, and it's an historic victory.
Well, the history sets a very low bar because the United States has not done a damn thing about the climate crisis at the federal level. So anything they do, you know, is better than what they've done. The $55 billion a year, it's almost all corporate welfare, credits, subsidies, low interest loans for the solar and wind markets, which are dominated by, in the case of solar, big oil, Exxon, BP, Shell. In the case of wind, you know, big manufacturers like General Electric and Vestas and Siemens. So it's corporate welfare. I'm afraid it's going to reproduce what we've experienced over the last decade, where, yes, renewables, wind and solar in particular, have expanded somewhat, but it's been added on to what we already have, mostly from fossil fuels and nuclear. So we may get more renewables, but it's not going to cut back on the fossil fuels and their emissions. And of course, that's what we've got to do. Now, there was a proposal in there for a clean energy standard that would have penalized utilities that didn't cut their fossil fuel emissions by 4% a year. But that was rejected by Senator Manchin, and so it's not in the bill. So what we have here is basically, you know, the old corporate subsidy thing. Plus, in the bipartisan infrastructure bill, they add $25 billion in new subsidies for fossil fuels on top of the $20 billion a year the government already hands out. I don't think this is a solution at all. You know, the incentives for building some solar and wind generation and for consumers to buy electric vehicles will help a little bit, but it's a drop in the bucket. I mean, most people that look at this say we need to spend at least $1 trillion a year. You know, that's a lot more than $55 billion. You know, I'm talking about think tanks and academics. They put that forward in the Thrive Agenda, which is what the progressives and Democratic Party wanted at the beginning of the year. The eco-socialist Green New Deal budget that my campaign proposed, and that was based on really going sector by sector and what it would really cost to transition to 100% clean energy by 2030, that was $2.7 trillion a year. So this is far short of what we need.
And now, I mean, the apologists would argue, well, yes, we didn't get what we really wanted, but, you know, at least the money that was cut from the, you know, $3.5 trillion wasn't really cut as much from climate. And what could you do? You got Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema from Arizona saying no, and the Democrats, you know, didn't really have any margin to move in the Senate. So, I mean, Biden and Schumer did as best as they could.
I totally disagree with that. At the beginning of the year, Senator Manchin said, this is like mid-January after the insurrection on January 6th. He said, we need to spend $2, $3, or $4 billion on infrastructure, which, of course, includes the climate policies. So he's gone down. He was demanding by the summer $1.5 trillion as a top line. So what Biden and the progressives in the Congress could have done is gone out to the people and said, we need your support. Put pressure on the people holding out, which was not just Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema, but about 15 or so conservative House Democrats that, you know, resisted on a number of issues, more on the social spending side of this proposal. But instead of mobilizing the people and being advocates for it, Biden played the inside game, and his whole thing about bipartisanship was crazy. The Republicans were never going to work with him. They tried to overthrow the election. And then, you know, he does the same thing with Manchin and Sinema and the conservative House Democrats, and they called the shots. The progressives made all the concessions. So I think there was another path. make this a political issue, tout what's in the bill, the things that were going to be done. Instead, the media narrative was how much it was going to cost, and people didn't really hear what was in it. So I think there was another path, but they didn't fight. They kind of, you know, did the inside Washington thing where the lobbyists have the upper hand. And they spent hundreds of millions of dollars between big pharma and big oil and so forth to cut this bill down and eviscerate the best programs.
One of the reasons that, you know, Biden announced this framework last week, even though there really wasn't any agreement to enact such a framework, is that he wanted to, you know, show up in the COP26 climate summit that began November 1st in Glasgow, going on for 12 days, basically the six-year update from Paris. You know, what are some of the things that, you know, we need to see as the world happen in Glasgow?
Well, it would be nice if we had countries making bigger commitments than they have, but look, Brazil's not there, China's not there, Russia's not there, and these are big greenhouse gas emitters. So that doesn't look good. And then, you know, the idea of climate reparations. You know, there are about 23 rich countries that have accounted for almost all the historical emissions. And the idea is because of the damages they've already created in the poor countries and the need for the poor countries to develop clean energy systems, there should be money paid by these rich countries to the poor countries to deal with those problems. So back at Cancun at the COP16, 10 COPs ago, committees on, was a council of?
Conference of Parties.
Yeah, the Conference of Parties, which is these climate summits, they said they committed, the rich countries committed to, by 2020, having $100 billion a year in a green climate fund. And so far, they've only committed $8.3 billion. And the U.S. has said, but hasn't delivered on, a little more. Whereas, you know, the people that study this thing say, for example, there was a group of environmental groups in the United States said we need to commit $80 billion a year over the next decade, which is probably insufficient at that level, but it would certainly be a lot better. So, and the problem is the U.S. has been the biggest historical emitter, but because factories have offshored, these poor countries are where a lot of these emissions are coming from. Now, we import a lot of those products, and a lot of those factories are owned by U.S.-based corporations, so we're responsible for them. But just take China, for example. 85% of their emissions, and they're the world's largest emitter right now, are for the domestic market. Only 15% is exported. So we got to have a global Green New Deal. And unfortunately, the U.S. has historically said, yeah, we're the historical biggest emitters, but we don't acknowledge that we owe a climate debt, although they've put more money in than any other country. But it's, like I said, a drop in the bucket compared to what's needed. So that should come out of the Glasgow summit, but it doesn't look good.
So we've been talking with Howie Hawkins, representing the Green Party. Howie will be speaking on Saturday, November 6th, starting at 11 o'clock at the Radix Center in the South End of Albany. It's part of a global day of action for climate justice being sponsored by the PAWS and the Green Party, a bunch of other groups. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. I want to go back a little bit, Howie, and this actually was an issue that Governor Cuomo used to raise to sort of defend his anemic support, especially initially in his first two terms, for renewable energy. And he made the point that, hey, you know, in Germany, they gave a lot of incentives and a lot of renewable energy was built out, but it did not, you know, sort of lower emissions overall, but it also didn't really mean that the new renewable energy was being actually built in the place where it needed to be. Now, to some of us, that would, you know, lead to the concept, well, perhaps you need to actually do this through some type of, you know, democratic planning and, you know, public ownership. So I guess that ties into your, you know, your concept of an eco-socialist Green New Deal.
Yeah, we need public power. The incumbent utilities and the big fossil fuel corporations, they want to make money on what they've already built or know how to do. And so we need to take them over and use the resources and assets they have to phase out fossil fuels and ramp up renewables. And they're already, as I mentioned earlier, they're the biggest players in the solar market when you talk about big oil and, you know, manufacturing. It's big companies like GE. We need to bring them into a public system where we can democratically plan how to get this done. If we just leave it to incentives in the market, like are proposed in Build Back Better, these, you know, the $55 billion a year, the companies will, yeah, thank you for the money, but they're not going to shut down their things they're already doing in fossil fuels. So that's why we need to have this become a public utility rather than a for-profit enterprise that can make a lot of money off of fossil fuels, which we got to get off of.
No, one of the things I noticed, I mean, $55 billion a year, you know, can sound a lot to people, but then you look at the military budget and, you know, formally it's about $750 billion a year. In reality, it's probably well in excess of a trillion. But I was also just read recently that Americans spend $100 billion a year taking care of their pets. Well, you know, pets are nice, obviously. But, you know, that sort of dwarfs, you know, the $55 billion a year. And then also you've talked quite a bit about a climate emergency. And particularly you make reference to, you know, what did, you know, FDR do in terms of taking control of the economy after Pearl Harbor?
Well, the federal government took over a quarter of the manufacturing capacity of the country in order to plan the production of arms. They called it the arsenal of democracy. So they turned industry on a dime, from producing automobiles and trucks to producing arms and tanks and, you know, other weapons of war, because it was an emergency. And that's what we needed to do. We need to do nothing less to defeat climate change. And right now, we're not doing that. We're just throwing money at the big fossil fuel companies for their solar operations. And that'll be added onto the fossil fuels we're already burning, not replacing the fossil fuels.
I'll just mention, if people want to see some of the executive orders that people have talked about that the president could take, you can look at climatepresident.org. And I also point out that even though he made a promise to curtail, actually stop, you know, during the campaign, you know, leases for oil and gas and public land, almost it seems like the opposite. The United States under Biden will be giving out more than they've ever done, at least since the Bush era. Howie Hawkins is going to be this Saturday, November 6th, at the March and Rally, starting at 11 at the Radix Center. If people want to read more about, you know, your $2.7 trillion you know, climate plan, eco-social Green New Deal, where can they find that?
It's on the campaign website for my campaign in 2020. It's howiehawkins.us. And go in the issues tab and look for the policy papers. And in there, you'll find a budget where we went sector by sector and used, you know, existing costs to figure out what it would cost to replace all the fossil fuel burning we're doing, not just in power production, but transportation, manufacturing, agriculture, and buildings. And we came up with $2.7 trillion. And that's, I think, the real cost. What we're doing now with Build Back Better is, well, you know, when Biden first proposed the American Jobs Plan back in the spring, it was about $2.25 trillion. That didn't count the social programs, which he added on the American Families Plan, total of about $6 trillion. But the amount they were willing to spend was dependent on how much money they could raise with the tax reforms he was proposing. That's not the way you do it. You figure out what the problem is and what it's going to cost to solve it. And then you figure out how you raise the money or borrow the money to do it. So you really solve the problem. But they're not doing it that way. They're basically, you know, it's politics. And the big, powerful, rich interests are dominating the process. That's why we've gone from Biden's original $6 trillion to less than $2 trillion. Biden's original proposal was inadequate to begin with.
Well, Howie, I want to thank you for joining us today, Howie Hawkins. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. We're joined today by Jennifer Wilson, who is the Deputy Director of the New York State League of Women Voters. And on Election Day, November 2nd, there will be five propositions on the ballot that voters get to vote upon. We did have NYPIRG and Common Cause on recently to talk about their positions on ballot 1-5. Certainly a lot of attention has been paid to proposition number 2, which would establish a constitutional right to clean and healthy environment in New York. But there's also a lot of discussion around proposition 1, which talks about amending the apportionment and redistricting process every 10 years in New York State after the census figures out how many people live and where. We have to redraw the lines, particularly for the state legislature and Congress. At least that's done by the state legislature. Counties and cities do them themselves. And I thought I was going to start with a brief read-in of proposal number 1, but the summary alone on the Board of Elections webpage runs for over 2 pages. It's an incredibly long thing. But Jennifer, thank you for joining us, and maybe you could both start off by saying, what exactly does proposal number 1 do?
Yeah, Sharon, thanks for having me. It does a lot of things, which is why the summary is so long, but you can really break down what the changes are into changes that are not controversial. So changes that are already in state statute, changes that are already required by the U.S. Constitution, basically things we have to do. And then the controversial changes. And the controversial changes are all related to the process of the commission when voting on maps, and then the legislature when voting to approve the commission's proposed maps.
Now, 10 years ago, last time this issue was addressed, Governor Cuomo largely sort of cut a deal with the Senate Republicans. The Senate was controlled by the Republicans, the Assembly controlled by the Democrats, and traditionally the Senate redrew the lines to make sure more senators from the Republican Party get elected, and the Assembly redrew the lines to try to get more Democrats elected. And the governor allowed that to go forth 10 years ago, but they put together a new constitutional changes to try to make the redistricting process a little less partisan, a little bit more, really trying to group people together based on geography and, sense of community. Why is the legislature thinking that, we're going through the process right now, not exactly working particularly well, but why so quickly coming back to the voters asking them to change the process?
Well, as you point out, the last time around, the Senate was controlled by Republicans, the Assembly by Democrats, and the Assembly is still controlled by Democrats, but now the Senate is also controlled by Democrats. And the original provision included some language to make sure that the minority party, whoever the minority party may have been at that time, would still have input into the mapping process, even if there was a single party controlling both the Senate and Assembly. This provision will remove those protections for the minority parties. And I'm saying parties because it's not just Republicans, it's the other parties as well. Green Party, Working Families Party, Conservative Party, Libertarian Party. Basically, anyone who is not a Democrat would have been protected with the rules from the 2014 amendment. This new amendment will take away those protections and basically say it doesn't matter if who's in control, it doesn't matter who the other parties are. If we are the majority party, we can basically do whatever we want.
So I understand the Leeward Voters is representing or recommending a no vote on proposal number 1. You just obviously identified some of your concerns, but, I guess one other, do you want to articulate the other reasons you think the voters may want to reject this? And if this is rejected, are you satisfied with the present situation, or are there other reforms you would like to see to make the process even more independent?
Sure. And we are in favor of the majority of the reforms in here. So we're supportive of constitutionalizing, reapportioning people who are incarcerated back to their last residence. We're supportive of constitutionalizing, which is also already protected in the U.S. Constitution, but making sure that all people are counted regardless of their citizenship status. The main thing we're not supportive of is this idea of taking away the protections for other parties and essentially allowing one party to have control over the entire process. And the other thing we're not supportive of is redistricting is happening right now. We are right in the middle of the redistricting process. The commission is having hearings around the state. There's draft maps on the table. And there's really no reason to be doing this, tinkering with the rules in the middle of the process. There's absolutely no reason this needs to happen right now. The good things should have happened years ago. The bad things shouldn't happen at all. But that's basically our reason for opposing this amendment.
You know, I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit, but probably some of the listeners know I've been involved over the years with the Green Party. And in fact, all the third parties in New York State right now are, as you probably know, are suing the state legislature because the governor ran through a bill that largely gets rid of all the independent third parties and only allow the third parties, like the conservatives and the Working Families Party, which are appendages of the two major parties, to exist. I can't really say that any of these proposals actually gives any role to trying to, protect the smaller third parties. And I remember 20 years ago in Albany, the courts required the Albany County to redraw its line after the petitioning process was started. And in the city of Albany, the Democrats literally picked this one Green Party candidate and just moved her block across Central Avenue to a different district. So how do you see the small third parties actually being protected under the redistricting?
Sure. And, when I think of it, I really think of it as this idea of the factioning that's happening within the two major parties. So when we're talking about the two major parties, Democrats and Republicans, we don't have just middle of the line Democrats and Republicans anymore, not just here in New York State, but nationally. There's progressive Democrats, there's more socialist Democrats, and there's a lot of Democrats who align themselves with other minor parties like the Working Families Party or the Green Party. And we see the same thing on the Republican side. We see more conservative Republicans, we see more libertarian Republicans. When we are allowing a single party, a middle of the line party, these incumbent legislators who have essentially held these seats for decades,